This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Gunnison and Noel Lim. We're taking a look at the Asia-Pacific region because we are now mid-year through 2021 and it's becoming increasingly clear that we're seeing an economic divergence between the countries that are controlling COVID-19 and rolling out vaccines quickly and those that are not. As the fast-spreading Delta variant of the COVID-19 virus appears throughout the APAC region, Moody's Analytics notes that those with vaccines and well-managed COVID containment policies will be better positioned for 2020 as the world begins to normalize.
However, countries that must continue to enforce strict social distancing, partial lockdowns and sealed borders will struggle if they must maintain accommodative policy and fiscal support as the rest of the world moves on. So which countries in APEC are leading the way? How does Malaysia rank? And what will happen to countries that don't contain COVID-19 going into 2020? All very, very important questions.
And to help us with them, we're speaking this morning with Steve Cochran, Chief APEC Economist at Moody's Analytics. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today. So how much of a divergence could we see between the haves and the have-nots effectively in APAC?
Well, we're seeing a fair amount of divergence already. The ones that have, one, first effectively controlled COVID have done much better in terms of opening up their own domestic economies and moving forward. What's interesting is that across the region, most of the region still benefits from pretty strong export trade, manufacturing side of the economy doing pretty well. And what separates those that they're doing well from those that are not are how much the domestic economies either have opened up and consumer spending is driving the economy, or whether they're still shut down due to COVID. And there's a limitation on domestic spending and also domestic investment.
A key element to managing COVID-19 is the vaccine rollout. Which markets, in your view, are leading the way in APAC and who are lagging behind?
Yeah, there's a wide divergence across the whole Asia-Pacific region. Initially, you know, there was a lot of complacency across the whole region because in the beginning, COVID was fairly well contained, particularly in North Asia, but also initially in places like Singapore and Malaysia and such. Now the countries that are doing the best in terms of the vaccination rollout is Singapore. I think you can say Singapore is well ahead, although China is catching up very, very quickly, which is a very positive sign for the whole region. If there are two countries that are really suffering in terms of the lack of ability, one, to contain COVID, and two, to roll out of vaccines, it's the Philippines and Indonesia. Philippines has had very, very extensive and lengthy lockdowns that has really hobbled the economy. And yet COVID-19 is still not well contained and they're not rapidly rolling out vaccinations. Indonesia has been less aggressive in terms of shutdowns, but one of the effects of that is a wave of COVID that's passing through into Indonesia right now and the need to get vaccines going much more quickly there as well. Good sign in Malaysia that the pace of vaccination is accelerating, but then of course you know that the movement control orders are quite strict at the moment in Malaysia.
We'll jump into Malaysia in just a second, Steve, but first, the Federal Reserve indicates that normalization of federal funds rates could begin in early 2023, a year ahead of the previous policy expectations. What are the implications of this to economies that haven't recovered yet, especially going into 2022 and beyond?
Yeah, it's still a ways away, and the Federal Reserve still seems to be maintaining their patience and their watchfulness in terms of how sticky inflation is. So 2023 is still a ways away, although time is moving quickly these days, it seems. What it means is that we know that at least by 2023, interest rates will begin likely rising again in the U.S. and perhaps in other areas that have rolled out vaccines very, very quickly, particularly in Europe. What that means is that if economic recovery is delayed because of a lack of vaccinations, central banks may have to hold on to lower interest rates and policymakers will have to continue spending to support the economies in the areas where COVID is still prevalent. That's increasing spread in interest rates between, say, developed economies in the U.S. in particular, and countries in Asia that may be behind, could have an impact in terms of generating a movement of capital away from the low interest rate countries, away from the slow growing countries, and also put some downward pressure on foreign exchange rates as well. So that could add to some difficulty in terms of the economic recovery of the lagging countries.
So coming back to Malaysia, Steve, we're currently battling 5,000 cases a day on average, and we're in a strict lockdown. Are we here at risk of being one of those laggards, being left behind if we don't turn the corner on COVID management by the end of the year? And what would that mean for us?
Yeah, Malaysia, it's tough because in a way, we've seen that there's a fair amount of resiliency in the Malaysian economy, that when initially it looked like COVID was contained well late last year, the economy bounced back really very, very quickly. But then when further rounds of COVID came along and there had to be additional strict movement control orders, of course, that slowed the economy again. And so in Malaysia, I think it truly is all about the pace of vaccination, whether Malaysia can achieve some kind of herd resiliency by hopefully early next year, and the economy can open up again. If that's the case, Malaysia should be okay. But it really is critical to get the vaccinations out quickly and to get it out widely across the entire geographic space of Malaysia.
The government has launched a 150 billion ringgit fiscal package, of which 10 billion ringgit is direct injection. In your view, does the package go far enough in addressing the needs of the country, at least in the immediate term?
You know, one of the very positive factors about the Malaysian economy is that policymakers have been very generous in terms of their fiscal support. I think there have been few other countries in the region that have rolled out as much fiscal spending as Malaysia. I mean, one has to look really to either Japan or to Singapore to see similar levels of spending relative to the size of the economy. It's a very positive aspect of Malaysia, because what it helps do is it helps to avoid, you know, what economists are calling scarring. In other words, it helps to support households so that savings aren't completely depleted. It helps support small and medium-sized enterprises and the industries that are particularly hurt by COVID, so that, again, once the movement control orders are eased, the economy gets back to normal, those entities in the economy are still functioning. They're still employing. They're still paying wages. It means that the economy can bounce back a little bit quicker than if there is a lack of this fiscal support in the economy.
I think when we speak to some of the Ministry of Finance people, and they say they will have to take on some debt, how much debt do you think Malaysia might need to take on, in your estimate, to fund this?
Yeah, this, of course, is the downside, is that almost all the fiscal support has to be debt financed. I think Malaysia is okay in terms of its debt load and in terms of what it may have to take on. If you look at the government debt to GDP ratio, it's about 50% or so. And that's kind of in the mid-range across emerging markets around the world. It's not low, but it's not at the high end. In other words, there's still some fiscal space, if you will, for Malaysia to go to the debt markets to borrow and to be able to manage that debt. But it will be an added a burden going forward. And ultimately, once the economy is back on its feet and expanding once again, the government's going to have to be very cautious in terms of consolidating that debt and trying to reduce the annual budget deficit back to a more normal level.
And now, Steve, we've got about a minute left here. What will you be keeping an eye on in APAC for the second half of 2021? And what is your outlook for the region?
So the things I'm looking at, of course, just what we've been talking about, COVID. We've got to keep our eye very, very closely on the new variants that are coming out. How quickly they spread, and particularly what it means in terms of hospitalization and mortality. If the vaccinations can be rolled out fast enough so at least fewer people are ending up in hospital, that will be a good sign that there is some management, ease of management of COVID. Second, industrial production. I'm watching whether the economies can still stay connected with the global economy, keep the export side of the economy going until the domestic economies can open up. Third, inflation. There's a lot of fear that there is a lot of pent-up demand for goods and services combined with difficulties in terms of supply chain management around the world today. So we're not seeing a lot of inflation yet in the Asia-Pacific region, but I'll be watching very, very carefully month by month as those figures come out. And finally, looking at credit quality, looking both at levels of government debt and looking at private debt and whether there will be any issues going forward in terms of managing a credit, once again, as the economy gets back on its feet.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Steve Cochran, Chief APAC Economist at Moody's Analytics, and we'll be watching all of those things as well as we head forward into the second half of 2021. Up next, though, we're going to be taking a look at the iChitra withdrawal scheme. That's going to be happening after a few minutes. Be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.